are the kindest man that I have ever met, and you know, I'm hoping he's going to share some of that with you guys tonight. So I would like to introduce Lee.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Lee. Thank you very much, Jim, for that very kind introduction and for asking me to speak. This is my spiritual home, this meeting. It's where I get strength, and so I can't tell you what a privilege it is to be with you today. And if any of you feel as nervous as I do, then you can certainly use a meeting just like I do. So my parents were born in China. They immigrated to the United States to find a better life. And they met while in graduate school at the University of Tennessee in Knoxville, where I was born. And moved to various places, the East Coast to Milwaukee, and finally came out to California. They worked very hard. They both had successful careers in the computer industry. And when they moved to California, up to the Bay Area, an exclusive area in the Bay Area. And I remember growing up feeling very loved. I was the only child, so I got a lot of attention. And I think that later would help me accept a loving God, because they were loving to me. So I could easily conceptualize what it feels like to be loved and cherished and to feel very special. So regardless of what else I say this evening, you know that about my parents. And if that's all you knew, if that's all you knew about my parents, I think you and our family, you'd believe that we were a typical immigrant success story, and in some ways we were. But of course, I'm here for a reason. And my early childhood memories of my father's drinking was just social. We lived in Wisconsin, and my parents went to parties with German friends in Milwaukee. There was a lot of drinking. And it was not until, I think, years later, as his drinking progressed, that I also noticed a change in my own thinking about my father's drinking. And, there'd be evenings in which, you know, he'd, in the middle of the night, he'd get up and pour himself a drink, and actually he'd go downstairs and go to the kitchen, and as soon as he turned on the light in the hallway, I'd wake up, and I'd hear him go downstairs, open the freezer door, put the ice in his glass, and looking back now, I was obsessed about his drinking. But it wasn't his drinking so much that has the most vivid memories for me, because there was violence in our home. And didn't so much witness much of it as I did hear it and see the aftermath of it. The glass on the floor, the broken dishes. And looking back, those experiences have a more lasting effect on me than watching my father drink. As the years went on, you know, in our family, much like other families, you know, of, I suppose, our culture, my parents stressed education. And the idea was that if I got good grades in school, I could go to a good college. And if I went to a good college, I could get a good job. And if I got a good job, I'd be happy. So I remember calling my mother up one day when I was in college and bringing up the subject of my father's drinking. And she said, you know, don't worry about it, Lee. You just concentrate on your grades. And so, you know, when I got into the program, I read a page in our Courage to Change about if only. If only X would happen, I would be happy. And that's how I grew up thinking. And meanwhile, my father's drinking deteriorated. Eventually, our family just began to fall apart. My father resigned from his job as an administrator at a university up in Northern California. My mother had to resign from her position because she went out on disability for back problems. And meanwhile, I began experiencing tension headaches. And it got to the point where I couldn't sit down and read a page. I had lost the ability to concentrate. And I was depressed, and I didn't know what was wrong with me. So my parents took me to see doctors. And I saw a neurologist, got a CAT scan, and there was nothing physically wrong with me. So I remember sitting in the neurologist's office with my parents, and he gave us a slip of paper with three referrals to psychologists or counselors. And that's what I did. And I began to see a counselor, and you know, for the very first time, I didn't stay very long, but for the very first time, I felt as though I could confide in someone, and someone was, you know, on my side, so to speak. We never discussed alcoholism, as far as I can remember. But that's something that I did, and I eventually dropped out of school and rented a small room in an apartment in San Francisco, feeling broken, feeling lost, as I indicated, depressed. And I grasped for ways to try to cope. And for me, coping was trying to find solutions without knowing what the problem was. I thought that the problem was because of my cultural background. And so I started joined an Asian American support group, all right, which, you know, had its benefits but didn't address the problem. I fantasized. I resorted to fantasy. You know, if only this, if only I was with this person, then I'd be happy again. So one night, my father was, I went out to dinner with my father and a friend of his, and he drank a whole bottle of wine and ordered some more. I went to bed that night thinking, you know, there's nothing more that I could do about my father's drinking. And I remember a good friend of mine, had come over to the house, and saw all these bottles of alcohol outside in the recycle bin. He said, Lee, you know, you should really do something about that. And, you know, I guess that was a prick in my fog of denial. And so the next morning, I went to the AA Central office and got my father some literature. And I went to a local hospital to their alcohol rehabilitation program and got him some literature from that because I wanted to give my father some options. And I talked with my dad about his drinking, and he tried to convince me that he wasn't an alcoholic. Okay. Now, he didn't end up going to AA right away, but I did find Al-Anon, and I had gotten back to school. And found Al-Anon my first year back at school at a local meeting. And that first meeting that I went to, I can remember it. I can remember people talking about a lot of embarrassing things. But I felt at home. People were talking about their feelings. And for those early meetings in Al-Anon, I would typically leave right after the meeting and go find some place and cry, because people were talking about feelings that I hadn't allowed myself to feel ever. People talked about their feelings and they put names to feelings, and I learned a vocabulary about feelings. Anger, disappointment, jealousy, you name it, the spectrum. You know, for me, when I was growing up and I was angry, I didn't know how to express myself. I'd just go off and cry somewhere. All right, but I learned a vocabulary, and I became aware of what I was feeling. Within about a year after I entered Al-Anon, I moved down here to Los Angeles to continue my education, and I found my home group. This group here. And this has been my spiritual home since then. My first meeting, a gentleman walked up to me, he patted me on the butt and asked me if I was new. So I like to say that my sponsor loves me in a very special way. And I heard an AA speaker when I was relatively new in Al-Anon who said that she called her sponsor every day. So I said, well, why don't I give that a try? And I did. I started calling, and even sometimes more than once a day, sometimes seconds after I hung up. And Willie was always there to take my call. And I went through the steps with my sponsor, and some of the most transformative steps, or the helpful steps, was step four. You know, I used the A Big Book as a guide, the Column Method. I wrote down a list of people who I felt resentful towards, why I felt resentful, what it affected in my life, what their actions, how their actions affected my life, and what my part in it was. And the miracle of step four was that it helped me get rid of resentments. And so when I had a resentment, I'd write it down. And the chief culprit for me, there were a number. But among them were, I want to be right. Even if it means nurturing grievances, seeing myself as a victim, and wallowing in self-pity. Another culprit was, I take the words and actions of others personally, and I take offense at them. And there is a page in our One Day at a Time that talks about taking offense. And it teaches us that we don't have to take offense. And somehow when I put my resentment on paper and I put my part in it, in writing, then the resentment goes away. I took criticism personally. And I discovered through working the fourth step that part of the problem was not the particular thing that this other person said, but my desire to seek the other person's approval. If I wasn't looking for the other person's approval, then I could care less what the person said. Okay. And forgiveness. There's an index, as we all know, in the back of our daily readers. And in the back of the One Day at a Time, there's one page on forgiveness, page 120. And I thought, wow, only one page. But it gives me everything I need to know about forgiveness. And what it teaches me is that I would have no reason to forgive another person for what he or she did if I did not condemn that person in the first place. So, taken to logical conclusion, the only person that I can really forgive is myself for judging. No matter how premeditated or intentional I think the other person's actions are. I can forgive if I let go of judgment and condemnation. So these were the gifts that that step four gave me. Now, you know, around this time in Al-Anon, I'd be traveling back and forth to see my father and my mother. But at that time, they were separated, but living in the same house. Okay, so, you know, they lived in a house where they could live at opposite ends. And I go up to see my father on holidays. And just to backtrack a little, not too long after I found Al-Anon, my father did find Alcoholics Anonymous. And we sat down one afternoon, and he asked me to, well, after some arguing back and forth about whether he was an alcoholic or not, he asked me to take him to a meeting. And so I took him to a meeting at that same hospital where I got some literature. And I think he slept right through it, but thought it was a good meeting. But he started to go. And I was so proud of my father. You know, he found Alcoholics Anonymous later in life. I looked around those meetings and I didn't see a lot of people, you know, of our ethnicity. And, you know, there can be cultural barriers, I imagine, to that he had to overcome, but he did it. And he had a sponsor come over and work the fourth step. And I go up and visit him on holidays. You know, up there they had Alcathons, 24-hour meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous during the holidays, during the major holidays. And so, you know, we went to a meeting on Thanksgiving night, and they had turkey and donuts at the meeting. I was proud of my father, but it was hard to know how to act around him. I didn't want to get, well, to give you an example, one time he asked for some stamps, and I said, no, get them yourself. Okay. I didn't want to get, I was still angry, and I didn't want to get too close to my father because I didn't want to get hurt again. I tried, though, in my own ways to show him that I loved him, but it was tough. And one visit in 1995, I was preparing to go up there, talk to my sponsor before I went. He said, Lee, just be of service. And we had a beautiful day together, my father and I. Rode the bus around San Francisco. Had seafood in Half Moon Bay. And I flew home. And shortly after, got a call from my mother saying that my father had passed away. And she found him on the floor, and coroner said it was a heart attack. But even that weekend, when I had gone up before my father passed away, and forgive me, maybe I'm getting my weekends confused, but the weekend that before he passed away, I knew he had gone out because I saw alcohol around the house. And although the autopsy report said it was a heart attack, I believe that he died from the disease of alcoholism. And this group was there for me. Members of this group passed around a card, signed it, and I kept it next to my bed. It was the first thing I saw when I woke up. And I felt so many different things. It's the first time that I experienced grief for someone very close to me who had passed away. I felt guilt because I kept thinking, well, what if I had called my father that day? Maybe he wouldn't have taken that drink. I felt guilty for not being able to save my father. I felt relief that my mother was now spared the decision of whether or not to divorce my father. And I still felt a lot of resentment towards my father. And, you know, I heard people say that, you know, they only remember the good things about their loved ones. Well, I wasn't there when he passed away. And I got some lasting relief when I went back to the steps and went back to step one. I was reminded that I was powerless over this disease of alcohol. Alcoholism. Nothing that I could have done or failed to do would have stopped my father from drinking. And eventually, I continued to work the steps, and when I got to step nine, I heard that some people wrote a letter to their loved ones and read it at their gravesite, and that's what I did. And I remember going up to a retreat from this meeting and reading a draft of my letter to the people who were there, and I read it to him at his gravesite. And a remarkable thing happened. After that day, I had peace of mind with respect to my father. And I don't know of any other place, any other group of people that could have made that possible for me. But you in the Al-Anon family groups. Going back a little, about the same time that I started Al-Anon, I also met the woman who would later be my wife in college. The first time I met her, I sat down at the college cafeteria, sat across from her, and she was complaining. And over the years, she's said some things that have made my sponsor laugh over the phone. I remember we were having a picnic of sorts and apologizing to her for one reason or another. And she said, "Lee, do you wake up in the morning thinking about what you're going to apologize to me for?" When I did my ninth step, she said, wait, I think I know what you're doing. I saw this on Seinfeld. And when I was still living up in the Bay Area and she was living down here because she's from Los Angeles, I remember one telephone conversation. She said, "All men are pigs." And next thing I know, I was driving down to Los Angeles. And I called her when I was outside her door and said, "Here I am. Let's talk about what happened." So when I tell you that I had do have a hard time with criticism sometimes, it's better now. My relationship with my wife, Cecilia, was one of the chief activators. I'd stew for days about something that she said. Okay. And in our literature, in The Courage to Change, it talks about options. Okay. That I don't automatically have to react the same way to a situation. So when I was criticized, I could say the Serenity Prayer, call my sponsor, leave the room, change the topic. Okay. So this program gave me tools. And I can't tell you how many times calling my sponsor saved an argument with Cecilia. Okay. We would eventually marry a few years after my father's passing. And that first year was tough. We hadn't lived together. And coming home, for dinner, it was tough to get up and leave for a meeting. All right. But I knew that I did not want to go back to the way I felt before. And that's what got me out the door. I had to make adjustments. I attended this meeting religiously, rain or shine, even if it meant not attending a function that my wife wanted to go to. And understandably, that created a great deal of resentment. Okay. And so I had to strike a balance. And that's what this program taught me. And I had to strike a new balance when we decided to have kids. So our kids are now, by the end of the year, they'll be 7 and 9. We didn't have kids until about 7 years after our marriage. And I finally decided that you know, I had something to contribute to the next generation. Because of what I learned here. You know, I started cutting down my meetings. I continued to come here, but I let go of service commitments, started saying no to commitments. You know, that's in some ways very counterintuitive for us who've been in the program, because it is important to stay active. But for me, it's also important to live without regret. And one of my greatest fears as a parent was being an absentee dad. And I didn't want to do that. Some things I think about these days. There's a reading in our One Day at a Time that talks about a fable of the sun and the wind. And they have a competition to see who could take off the jacket of a traveler passing by. And the wind blows and blows and blows, and the traveler clutches to his jacket more and more. And the sun shines, and its warmth causes the traveler to take his jacket off. And that's really stuck with me. Gentleness with my kids, because I can be authoritarian, I should say. You know, there are rules; they have to follow them. Okay, but I remember to try to be gentle. Okay, and I'm at my kids' soccer games, I have to say, a couple weeks ago. Kind of got carried away. I was on the sidelines cheering and, you know, go Yellow Jackets. And what I realized that I was doing was cheering so loud in hopes that it would distract the other team and demoralize the other team. And I was embarrassed afterwards. But my son knew that I was there and that I was cheering like crazy for him. So, you know, not getting to the number of meetings that I used to, I find that I have to rely on my higher power even more, to trust and believe that God will provide, and He has. You know, I have a great deal to be grateful for. Several years ago, my mother was visiting Los Angeles, and we had some time alone together, and it helped me to remember. She talked about what it felt like after a night when she and my father fought. And how humiliated she was with the injuries that she received. And it brought me back to those days. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, I never experienced any type, you know, that type of physical abuse. But my mother still lives with very painful memories. And, you know, she's retired now, and I want, like all children, I suppose, want the very best for my mother, want her to be happy, and oftentimes she isn't. And I want to try to fix it, solve it. I get angry, I get frustrated when I listen to her. So I go back to the fifth tradition, which says that in Al-Anon we welcome and give comfort to families of alcoholics. Although my mother is not a member of Al-Anon, despite my efforts. She's been deeply affected by this disease. And when I don't know what else I can say or do, sometimes I just remember to say that, Mom, it's going to be okay. And, you know, today I found out that that she's lost her license because she's had memory problems, and the doctor contacted the Department of Motor Vehicles. But all this is to say that I'm grateful for this program, because I experienced the family disease of alcoholism in my own way, and experienced my own pain, which I don't have to live with anymore. I'm grateful to you, people who attend meetings week in and week out, for leading me out of despair. You know, when I first started coming to this meeting, I vividly remember as people were sharing, looking down on the ground, and feeling as worthless as a piece of gum that I saw on the floor. And I didn't fully realize then, but just by being at that meeting, I had everything I needed to hold up my head and learn to live again. And, you know, there are people within earshot of here who are suffering from this family disease of alcoholism, who either do not know about the program or who are unwilling to go. And so I thank God, not that I've earned my place in this room, but that God has given me the willingness to keep coming back. And that's what God's grace is, right? It's a free gift, unearned gift. And I think that's what I have. Because there's nothing that distinguishes me from the person half a mile from here who's suffering from the disease of alcoholism tonight, except for my willingness to seek and accept help, which God has given me and given us by being here tonight. I thank my sponsor, and I thank his family. You know, when I was newly arrived in Los Angeles, I remember showing up one cold day at my sponsor's house, and his wife saw that I didn't have a jacket, and she gave me a jean jacket to wear. Their son Andy, who I've known for as many years, been an inspiration to all of us in this meeting. And I felt like a part of their family. They welcomed me into their home. My sponsor has taught me and taught all the people that he sponsors how to live with dignity. And I think back to a quotation in our One Day at a Time that says something like this, that a man who finds himself inhabits a mansion that he will live in the rest of his life. And these days when I think about my sponsor, I think about that. I'm grateful to my parents for the work ethic that they taught me. You know, if not carried to an extreme, it's helped me get to where I am today. And, you know, I was very angry towards my parents for many years because I felt that they didn't understand me, they didn't accept me, they had expectations that I couldn't fulfill. And what I learned in Al-Anon is that it's more important to understand myself, to accept myself, and to understand and accept others than it is to want others to understand and accept me. I'm grateful to my wife for all her support. You know, each of us, we do have babysitting in this meeting, okay? But you know, for someone like myself, my wife takes care of my kids every Thursday night I'm here. And we have an extended family who pitches in. Tonight, my wife is out of town, and my sister-in-law is watching our kids. So we have a great deal of help. And I'm grateful for the tension headaches that I suffered. Listening, sitting in meetings over the years, you know, I get the sense that this family disease of alcoholism not only shows itself in emotional, mental disturbances, but also has physical manifestations. And I believe that my tension headaches were related to growing up in this family disease. I couldn't please my parents and myself at the same time. And maybe, just maybe, those tension headaches were God's way of getting my attention and saying, Lee, you have got to find another way than the destructive, all-consuming attitude that I took towards my studies, because I was deeply unhappy at that time. And so God got my attention, and those tension headaches forced me to make a change. You know, I'm reminded of prayer of St. Francis, which is repeated in our Just for Today bookmark. And I thought I'd just read one paragraph of it. O Divine Master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive, it is in parting that we are pardoned, and it is in dying that we are born to eternal life. Now, I'm not very religious, so I'm sure this last portion here has some religious connotations. But for me, what it means is that Al-Anon has helped me change my thinking and change my behavior. It has helped me correct distorted patterns of thinking and has introduced me to a set of principles that I make my own. Every day, as I say my prayers, practice these principles, ask God for help, and come to these meetings. And in that way, I think, we are born into a life that is eternal, and that I hope continues for generations to come. So I would not have, well, I should say, so service for me is really an expression of gratitude for the life that I have been given. And, I would not want to experience the emotional pain that I live with growing up in this family disease. But if I had to do it all over again, knowing that I would find you on the other side, I most certainly would. So thank you for sharing this evening for me. Happy holidays. God bless all of you.